This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you, Keith, for the news. My name is Rich Bradbury. This, of course, is Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm joined in the studio by
Audrey Raj
and Christine Wong.
Hope you had a wonderful day off yesterday. We're all back at it today, aren't we?
Yes,
smiles, and
it's already Wednesday.
Yay. Halfway there, ladies and gents. Halfway there. Right. If you want to get in touch with the show today, 018-789-8899 is the WhatsApp number. You might want to get in touch. We have something about how Facebook are making a Tinder killer to help people find dates just when you thought they didn't have all of your information. This is another way of gathering some more.
Personal.
Absolutely, yes. Sticking with social media, here's how Instagram will be using AI to take on a bullying problem. And then, story number three, the number one reason most startups fail, and it's not quite what you think it might be. Mm. Moving on to Singapore, at Changi Airport, they may be using facial recognition systems to find late passengers. No hiding your embarrassment on your face anymore. And finally, how a smart dresser will help dementia sufferers put their clothes on correctly. Again, if you want to get in touch, 018-789-8899 or on Twitter, we are at BFM Radio. Right then, Christine.
Yes.
Tell me more about Facebook and what they want now.
Well, Facebook, as if it hasn't taken over all of our lives enough already, is now trying to find us all love. So Facebook is joining the dating game. And Zuckerberg made the announcement yesterday during his keynote speech at F8, or I guess Fate, which is Facebook's annual developer conference. And they are trying to compete with dating apps like Tinder. Zuckerberg emphasized that Facebook's intent was to help users find long-term relationships, quote-unquote, not just hookups. Mm-hmm. I don't really know how they're going to guarantee that, but fine. The CEO also acknowledged potential security concerns, saying that, "I want to be clear that we have designed this with privacy and safety in mind from the beginning." But how much of that we believe from Zuckerberg at this point, I don't know. Now, Facebook's chief product officer, Chris Cox, said that the idea stemmed from couples who had told Zuckerberg, apparently, that meeting their partner was the most important thing that had happened to them on Facebook. The goal, he said, was to make a product that would let more couples do the same, in a way that was opt-in, in a way that was safe, and in a way that took advantage of the unique properties of the platform and didn't get in the way of everyone who wasn't interested in dating. So these features haven't been released yet, but Facebook has said that they'll be coming soon. And all these features will be available within the Facebook app itself, so you don't have to download a separate app to access this, but you will see a little icon in the upper right of your screen that will take you to a portal called Dating Home.
Mm-hmm.
Where you can make a dating profile that uses only your first name and can't be seen by friends or on the newsfeed. It is only visible to other people who have also opted into the dating service. Mm-hmm. Past, you know, seeing the kind of typical profile picture and the name and the age and whatnot kind of profile, when you scroll down, you'll see events in your city and groups that are related to your interests.
You like this, we like this, let's go through this together.
Pretty much. So when you kind of click on an event, let's say you want to go to a concert, right? Then you will actually unlock the profiles of the people who are using that dating service who are also attending that thing. So you click on a thing, let's say you go to a concert, and then it's like, hey, look at all these other people who are also attending this concert. Presumably at that point, they'll be able to see your profile too if they click on the event, and so on and so forth. Then to start a conversation with another person from that list, you can click an interested button. It's not clear whether or not Facebook will allow the actual swiping gestures that Tinder has made very famous, but there's the ability to kind of pass on people.
Right.
Once you've selected interested, you can choose a photo from the other person's profile to help start a conversation. And then Chris Cox said that this will encourage, we hope, a more meaningful interaction.
Mm.
And if the other person decides to respond, they'll send a private message that isn't connected to WhatsApp or Facebook Messenger and is text only as a safety measure.
Uh-huh.
So I'm kind of interested in this as a concept, because at first I was just like, okay, it's just another extra thing that Facebook is trying to do because they have all this information and they can just do it. But I don't know, the way that they're approaching this, I actually quite enjoy. You know, you've got this kind of mutual events thing where you don't have to think about potential date ideas. Mm. You can already know that the person wants to go to this event and then meet up there. And then that in and of itself, it helps you to feel a bit safer, because if it's a public event, you know that people are around. It's not like a bar or something where you don't know if there's going to be people there and all that stuff. And also the fact of you can choose a photo from the other person's profile. Now, I don't know how they're going to do that exactly, but you know, if you use that in a nice way, it can be pictures of like places you've traveled to, or pictures of your hobbies, or pictures of like a pet or something, you know, and that could be an interesting way to get past the typical hello, hi, how are you, I'm good, how are you, right. what are you up to, not much conversation,
because
you know?
It's only supposed to be text,
yes,
right, there's no sharing of photos or of posts or things or videos,
it's just talking to people.
I just find it ironic that according to recent research, 33% of divorced couples cite Facebook as a reason for their split in the US, and 20% in the UK quoting Facebook as the reason that they split. And now they're moving on to a dating service.
Yeah, well, you know how Facebook can be dangerous
of
that
course,
way, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And the first thing I thought of was like, okay, just say I sign up for dating on Facebook, right? Mm. Am I going to see like people that I've already dated, or you know, friends, my own friends,
because
that could be kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then apparently Zuckerberg said that this dating on Facebook has a unique algorithm to match you with dates that are not your friends.
Oh.
So it's outside that bubble of yours.
Well,
so
that's interesting. I mean, how does it do that?
I don't know. It's just, I guess, if they are not your friends or not friends of your mutual friends, I guess then they qualify. So it's actually helping you reach out to a wider range of
people. I don't think I would be opposed to like finding someone that was on like my friends list in that kind of list. You know, just if only just to be like, haha, you're on the list, haha. Like, so sort of thing. But what I would appreciate is if they looked at your kind of relationship status. I mean, they have that information anyway.
Yeah.
So if you're the kind of person that's put that up there, if you've been in a relationship with someone, then that thing is clearly over, to just not put them on the list, that would be quite fun. Because you have, you know, you do see people on Tinder who accidentally find their exes on Tinder, and it's just a bit awkward for everyone
involved. I can imagine that being awkward, yes.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So then, and then you don't know whether to start right or left, and it's weird, and yeah. So that I can kind of see being a little bit useful. But I'm curious to see where this goes, because you know, the whole idea of finding dates and not just hookups and stuff, I think that Facebook is actually trying its best to really put that in practice, you know.
But how are they going to ensure that longevity?
I don't know about the long-term thing, but trying to create situations in which they're not talking about hookup situations and talking about lives and talking about events and mutual interests and stuff, and actually, you know, kind of saying, hey, you should go to these things together, have experiences together. I think that's an interesting thing, because no other dating app has tried that, where it's based on a kind of mutual interest in event rather than mutual interest in face.
Right.
My biggest worry, my biggest concern with this is if they're going to use your info from your dating home for targeted ads.
Right.
Oh, I bet they will. Come on. This is Facebook we're talking about. Everything you do on Facebook is supposed to create a targeted ad to you.
And the next question is, how long is it before Facebook decides to acquire Tinder?
You know. Ah.
I mean, fact of the matter is, you can already you connect to Tinder through Facebook anyway. So, I mean, the two are quite interlinked regardless. Mm. But Facebook is basically going to take over the world, and we're just, I'm already resigned to it.
And here's an interesting note. The owners of Tinder and, of course, Match.com,
yes.
The shares of these companies have fallen quite a bit on Facebook's announcement of their dating home.
Very interesting. Well, okay, let's ask folks at home. Would you be interested in finding a date via Facebook, I suppose? Let's start off with that question. Let us know, 018-789-8899, or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. I'm sure some people have at some point arranged a date via Facebook. This is ever so slightly different, though. Let us know what you think. Okay, let's stick with social media and move on to this next story about how Instagram are using AI to tackle a bullying problem.
Yes. So just today, Instagram will roll out a comment filtering technology that will automatically hide bullying comments on the social network. So they first announced this idea sometime last year, saying it had been, Instagram was training a tool to detect and suppress offensive and spammy comments in at least 9 different languages. So the filter is powered by machine learning. It's turned on by default, but users can opt out to let comments people leave on their posts go unfiltered. They can also enter specific keywords if they want to use to filter comments they receive. And this system is actually developed by Facebook. It's a text processing system, and it's called Deep Text, and it basically sorts out negative comments into categories including bullying, racism, and sexual harassment. So, you know, when I first read this, I was like, bullying on Instagram? I didn't realize that was a real thing and that was happening, because it just seems very harmless on the surface, right? Just people use it to look at pretty photos and share ideas and, you know, like interesting moments in their lives, right? So how does bullying come into play
Well,
here?
I mean, you kind of two schools of thought, isn't there? That if you have a particularly successful Instagram account, for example, it's often you will see an awful lot of negative comments on there. You know, jealousy aside, it could be for whatever reason. But then, Christine, you were also mentioning that there's a big problem with teenagers on there as well.
Yeah, so the problem with Instagram is that it's such a curated idea of perfection on Instagram. Everyone puts things on Instagram that, you know, are supposed to look great and supposed to look, you know, completely flawless. And that's really taking a toll on a lot of teenagers' mental health.
Mm.
And that kind of combined with the fact that you can just leave comments and say, you know, all sorts of things about the people, especially on stuff like Instagram stories and things like that, where the effects are sort of not permanent. You know, it has lent itself to Instagram being voted the number one app for the worst mental health.
So there is research on this, right? Survey released last year by a British anti-bullying group, Ditch the Bully, they found that 42% of young people had experienced bullying on Instagram, the highest of the networks that they surveyed about. By comparison, 37% reported bullying on Instagram's sibling network, Facebook, and 31% on Snapchat. So ideally, a sufficiently powered AI system can help curb bad behavior without kids actually needing to, tell someone older, tell an adult that, you know, they're being bullied on Instagram. So I guess this helps detect that and actually, just completely filter it out.
In fact, wasn't there a case here fairly recently about an international artist who was visiting here to do a tour, a concert or something, and she made a comment about her father?
I believe this is Dua Lipa.
Dua Lipa.
Using new rules. Yeah. That's the only thing I know about.
And she used a word which in her native language means father, but in this language means, you know, in Malay means something very different. And of course,
yes.
A whole bunch of people kind of jumped on that and started mocking her and were being quite mean.
Yes. Is she still coming to KL, though?
I don't know.
But even things like, for example, the very, you know, the infamous kind of Taylor Swift Kim Kardashian debate thing where Kim Kardashian posted a Snapchat video of Taylor Swift agreeing to something that Kanye West said, and then millions of snake emojis started flooding into Taylor Swift's Instagram. This was previous to Taylor Swift's whole rebranding where she deleted everything and whatever. But, you know, this is the whole thing of, like, when something happens on Instagram to put someone in a bad light, quote unquote, you know, people dogpile on these people. And there's a really bad kind of effect where, you know, you just see chains of comments that have nothing to do with the actual post. It's just a personal attack.
Mm. Yeah, and here I thought Instagram was just for pretty pictures.
Yeah, me too, actually. All right, time to take a short break. Got some music coming up from Buddy Miles in a second. Don't forget, though, folks, we are asking you a question whether or not you'd be interested to try out Facebook's new dating service, 018-789-8899, or on Twitter at BFM Radio. We'll be back in just a few minutes with a story about startups and why they fail. Normally a free story, but I thought I'd tackle it today. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes with me, Rich Bradbury, in the studio with Christine Wong and Audrey Raj. We started off the show today with a story about how Facebook are getting into the dating game. They're going to help you do more than hook up. They're looking for long-term relationships. We've all been in a long-term relationship with Facebook. We can't get rid of the thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, go on.
Yeah. This is what they do, right? You know, they steal ideas that work. I mean, Insta Stories was basically from Snapchat.
It was, correct?
You know, I think they recognize that Tinder's got a good thing going. And
they wanted a piece of that pie as well.
They wanted a piece of that.
I just love the fact that Stories went from Snapchat to Instagram to Facebook that is now owned by, like, that now owns
and
Instagram.
WhatsApp and WhatsApp as well.
And now WhatsApp, and it's like, guys, you all got to stop hopping on the bandwagon.
Yeah, give us something original for a change. Right, okay, we asked you if you would be interested in trying out a Facebook dating thingy. So here's what we've had so far.
We just have something from Irene who just says, Facebook dating. No, I'll probably get matched with a Russian troll.
Yeah.
Which I you know what? I don't blame you for thinking that, to be honest.
I mean, like we've discussed before, Facebook have got many a bot problem. Twitter have got many a bot problem. You know, we don't want any more of this kind of stuff, do we?
Dating apps by themselves already also have bot problems. You put the two together, it's just bot on bot.
Yeah.
I guess.
Bot on bot. That sounds like something Arvin would say.
Well, anyway, Arvin isn't here today, guys.
Moving swiftly along. Anyway, okay, so here's a story for you. CBI Insights, they're a research company based in the US. They recently analyzed 101 startup postmortems, so reports after they wrote after they failed. And the researchers extracted the top reasons startups fail, including things like a pivot gone wrong, legal challenges, disharmony within the team or with investors, poor marketing, and of course, the one frequently cited, running out of money.
Yeah.
But the number one reason was none of those. It was a lot simpler. The startup didn't solve a big enough problem. So what they do is they give a couple of examples. You know, tackling problems that are interesting to solve rather than those that serve a market need was cited as the number one reason for failure in 42% of the cases. So one startup in question, Treehouse Logic, put it a bit more boldly. Startups fail when they are not solving a market problem. We were not solving a large enough problem. So an example was the fact that a cool idea, you know, an app that you might use to make it easier for your friends to coordinate in real time on a Saturday night by, you know, you can all tweet in the same app and whatever. You can all, you don't need to do that. You know?
Is that really a problem
exactly
to solve in the first
place?
At the
end of the day, you could message one another. I mean, it's a pain in the backside, but you can do it. You know, and at the end of it, you've done it. And that's not really a pain point. So then it goes on to cite some examples of startups that really did do something that is a real problem. Let's say, for example, Chris, I know you're a big fan of Airbnb and that kind of thing. So the problem with checking in and out of a hotel oftentimes is that you have to check out early. And then if, let's say, for example, you've got a late flight and you've still got your luggage to carry around with you and you're just pulling it around the city or the town or whatever. You don't want to do that. So there's a company called Knock Knock City who created this startup where they've teamed up with convenience stores and shops. So for $2 an hour, you can drop your bag at the convenience store and they will look after it for you until you go to your flight or whatever.
That's
now, that's
nice.
Something great.
That sounds like a really great idea, because just imagine if you're in the shopping district, you know, from the airport, you go straight into the shopping district and you leave your bags at a shop and then you can go roam around until it's time to check into your hotel.
Exactly. What a simple problem solved. You know, we've all had that problem. And this is the issue. A lot of people kind of get together when they're doing these startups and it's like, I want to do it for the money. I don't want to do a 9-to-5. I want to do something else. But unless there's an actual pain point and an actual problem, more times, 42%, will likely fail.
So a cool idea or the big X factor in your startup idea
it's
is not
going
to cut it.
It's
right.
not enough.
Okay.
So there was another one, this guy called Essentia. What they were talking about is mattresses. So one of his family members was suffering from cancer. And what they realized is that, according to a lot of research, mattresses do this thing called off-gassing, where they release toxins into the air. I didn't know about this. Did you know about this?
No.
Right. So apparently they do. Certain mattresses, generally the foam-based roll mattresses, they release this kind of stuff into the air.
Okay.
And because his friend or family member was suffering, they needed to have him in a place where there were no toxins being released into the air at all. So what they did was to make a product that released no toxins. You know, it's entirely healthy, it's natural, and it's made of all natural ingredients or get-togethers. So that's what they've done with that. So again, it's another idea. Another one is about parents who, and Audrey, you may fall into this category, where you've arranged to go out for a night and your babysitter or whatever, at the end of the day, at the very last minute, has said, I'm sorry, I can't come. Something has popped up.
Nightmare.
And you're exactly, and you're left going, oh, what am I going to do now? So they created this app called Poppy. And what that does is it pairs up with people who are already pre-registered, and you can just go on the Poppy app, and within an hour or within a few minutes, you can have somebody come and look after your kid who's registered and is trustworthy and has a rating and one thing or another. You know, a great, great idea. So I think, you know, for those of you out there who are looking at creating a startup or looking at doing something other than your 9-to-5, really think about whether or not what you're doing is actually fixing a pain point.
Yeah, so that's the thing. Many of the startups that we interview, I know we have a general rule not to interview startups that are less than 6 months old.
Correct.
And this is why we have this rule, because many startups don't even make it to the 6-month mark, let alone the 1-year mark.
Yeah.
And it's because of a simple point like this, you know, you need to have a pain point that you are solving to make
Does it fix a problem?
Sustainable.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of people who want to create startups are very concerned about doing something different and unique, and they don't really actually focus on how that different and unique thing can sell. Like, how would it be useful to people, you know? And there's so much pressure to do something that is completely different and mind-blowing and groundbreaking from everyone else. But if it's groundbreaking and useless, no one's going to want to invest in it. Yeah. No one's going to want to buy your product.
It's going to be an expensive white elephant.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, time to take a short break. Don't forget, we are asking you whether or not you'd be interested to take part in a Facebook dating service. This was just announced over at Facebook's F8. Is it Fate? Are they calling it?
I think they're calling it Fate. Oh, I think that's
so
what they're going for.
Or is it the 8th year they've had it? I don't know.
I don't know.
So they've announced that they're going to be starting a dating service where they want you to do more than hook up. They want you to go on prolonged dates, and they want to help you start a relationship on one thing or another. Just to add to that question, has anybody out there actually used Facebook to meet somebody and is now in a prolonged relationship? I'd be curious to know that.
I know many people who, once they've met someone and they're interested in that someone, immediately like rush to the washroom and go check this person out on Facebook.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Yeah. Can you do that now? You
know, Facebook and Instagram profiles and Snapchat, and they're all linked together. You know, once they've got your name, that's it. You're done.
And how does this change the game?
Exactly. Let us know. 018-789-8899 or on Twitter at BFM Radio. Some music coming up now from Bob Dylan. It is Just Like a Woman on BFM 89.9.
Balanced Frank Medium. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio by
Audrey Raj
and Christine Wong.
We started off the show with a story about how Facebook are getting into the dating game. They're creating a Tinder killer to help people find dates. We're asking you guys, would you be interested in taking part in a Facebook dating service? I'm trying to say this without laughing.
Yeah, it's just ludicrous.
It is. Let us know. 018-789-8899 or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. I suppose most people, though, it is their biggest social network. But like we were finding out that it deals with people who are not actually in your social network, which obviously makes sense, I suppose.
It's a special algorithm that ensures that you are matched with people who are not your friends.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to buy that or not. Mm-hmm. Anyway, moving swiftly along to our next story, how down in Singapore, the Changi Airport, they may be using facial recognition systems to find late passengers.
Yeah, so have you guys been on a flight that was delayed because that last passenger just wouldn't come to the gate and board on time?
I was one of those passengers.
Wow.
Accidentally, I didn't realize. I booked a flight and the layover time I thought was substantially longer than it was. I literally got off my flight, landed, came through the gates, and my next flight was already boarding at the other end of the airport. And I literally had to just race across to the end, and I was the last person on the plane.
Same with me, except that they just switched the gate while we were all asleep during a layover, and then we didn't hear the announcement because we were all asleep, and then we had to sprint through the Dubai airport.
Mine was Dubai as well, funnily enough.
Oh, Dubai. How dare you? Yes.
A friend of mine, they called out for him 3 times, but he was on the phone having a huge fight with his girlfriend and completely missed the flight.
Oh, no.
But they waited for him for 45 minutes.
Wow.
So imagine that. Imagine being on that plane and waiting for some lost passenger for 45 minutes. But this might be a thing of the past, especially at Singapore's Changi Airport, which is testing facial recognition systems that could, in the future, help locate lost travelers or those passengers who spend a little too much time in duty-free shopping and, you know, not hear their names called out 3 times. So Changi Airport is looking at how it can use the latest technologies to solve many problems, from cutting taxiing times on the runway to quicker predictions of flight arrivals. So the CIO at Changi, the chief information officer, he says, his name is Mr. Lee, and he says that they have lots of reports of lost passengers. So one possible use that they could think of was to detect and find people who are on the flight using facial recognition. This, of course, with permission from the airlines.
Now, what about with permission for the passengers?
I'm going to think that someone has to sign off on that, right?
Like some sort of waiver, just saying, please don't put this to any other kind of use.
So Lee said that they have tested the technology that could allow allow for this and are working with various businesses, adding that they should have some capability to do this in a year's time. Now, one of the firms that are said to be working with Changi Airport, it's a Chinese firm called Yitu, and Yitu says that its facial recognition platform is capable of identifying more than 1.8 billion faces in less than 3 seconds.
Wow.
Yes, imagine that, 1.8 billion faces. And Changi's new terminal, the T4, is already using facial recognition technology to offer self-service options for check-in, baggage drop, immigration, and boarding. So the technology means that there will be fewer queues and fewer visible airport or security staff at Changi Airport. Luggage is dropped at unmanned booths that take your photo and match it against your passport. Then you are again snapped at an automated security gate and immigration, and a picture that is used to verify your identity at the boarding gate also matches you with your bags and your boarding pass and everything. So what I like this quote, right? Lee says, "Today you take your passport, you show your face, and you show your boarding pass. Then actually in future, you just take your face. You don't need your passport."
I mean, what worries me about that is that I look nothing like my passport photo, because my passport photo, I'm not wearing glasses in it, and I wear glasses all the rest of the time because I need them to see. So that might be a weird little obstacle for me if I ever go to Singapore. Just like, whoops, I just have to remove the Clark Kent disguise every single time I take a photo of anything.
And how will this work on identical twins?
Good question. I mean, I like the idea of this. I mean, I like the idea of shaving off time, and anything to do with saving time in an airport, I think, is a bit of a godsend. But, you know, bringing in a Chinese company, who, as we know, but then again, the software was useful at the concert not too long ago, right? Amongst 40,000 people,
yes,
it managed to identify a man who had a criminal record. Amongst all of those people, in just a few minutes, they found the guy and they managed to arrest him at the concert.
Oh.
You know, so it's really reliable. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I suppose it's pretty cool.
I think this is great.
I think this is cool, but I also feel like you could solve so many more problems by just having clearer sound systems in airports. I don't know about you guys, but exactly.
They are terrible.
One of the main things that I hate about you know, the way that airports announce things is that it's too loud and yet somehow not clear at all.
Right.
You know, and that is the big reason why I sometimes miss announcements and stuff when I'm in an airport, because I all hear is you know, so if they just made the sound system clearer, they would just solve... It could solve a lot of problems.
The only thing I hear at KLIA is you'll hear the announcement, and go, "Thank you, happy journey." And it's like, what? That's the only part of the message that I hear.
I can remember the way that the airport jingle sounds, but I cannot remember any of the announcements. Or, you know, I can't remember a single time where I've heard an announcement and been like, yes, I understood every word of that.
Yeah. I mean, and oftentimes the only place where the announcement is clear is if you are in a washroom, you know?
Yeah, which, what's the logic
right,
of that?
Right. Anyway, okay, we should probably take a break.
Yeah.
We've been asking you folks since the beginning of the show, would you take part in this Facebook experiment? They're making a Tinder killer to help people find dates and not just hookups. Let us know what you think. 018-789-8899. We are on Twitter at BFM Radio. Some music up next then. It is Aerosmith, Falling in Love. It's Hard on the Knees on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Building first world mindsets. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio by
Audrey Raj
and Christine Wong.
Moving on to story number 5. Interesting little concept here. A smart dresser that can help people with dementia help to put their clothes on correctly.
Yeah, so I mean, it goes without saying that getting dressed is one of the most critical steps in our daily routine. But for a lot of us, practice has made it kind of second nature.
Mm.
And for people suffering from dementia, they may actually lose that familiarity, and it makes dressing a really difficult and frustrating process. Now, this is an idea from NYU, and it's a smart dresser, which is a chest of drawers, I guess is the kind of translation of that. So it's meant to help people suffering from dementia through the process of dressing while reducing the load on overworked caregivers. So the way that this works, so the device is called Dress, which is great. And it's essentially a 5-drawer dresser with a little tablet on top that is both a display and a camera, and it monitors and guides the user through the dressing process. Because the idea is that there's only one right way to put on your clothes. You Correct. Know, like a shirt is only really right side out, and then the buttons are in front, and trousers are forward, and socks on both feet, and la da da. So, what happens is the tablet's camera looks for tags attached to the clothes to make sure that they're on right and in order. So, for example, making sure that someone doesn't put their shoes on before their socks. And then lights on each drawer signal the next item of clothing to don. So, for example, you'll have all of your shirts in the top drawer, and then all of your trousers in the second drawer, and then all of your socks in the third drawer, etc. And it will take you through each step and light up as you do so. So that even if you forget that you've put it on, the dresser knows.
It's a flowchart for your clothes.
Pretty much. Now, if there's any problem, if the person can't figure something out or can't find the right drawer or gets distracted, then the dresser will send an alert to the caregiver, and then the caregiver can come and help. But if all goes right, then the person will have just dressed themselves all on their own, which is something that they might not have been able to do for years.
For a while, yeah.
You know, so it's something that is really interesting. And it's just a prototype right now. The team who are behind this are actually looking into improving the vision system to standardize clothing folding so that it's a bit less complicated, and also enlarging or otherwise changing the way that the tags are coded on each item as well. But fact of the matter is, you know, this is something that will give people a lot more freedom and I guess independence as well.
Mm. Yeah, and also that positive feeling of being able to do this again, you know, put your clothes on, do something for yourself. I think for dementia patients, I think this is a big deal.
I like the idea of how it lights up each drawer, you know, to kind of indicate what's next.
To be honest, I feel like I would need that just now. Sometimes I forget that I run in and I have a t-shirt and I'm like, what have I forgotten? Oh, well, I don't have my jeans on. This is a disaster. I'm
so
not
can
leaving
we,
the house.
We'd see this like starting in places like care homes, I'd imagine, that kind of area.
That's the kind of main place where that would happen, where they would just install them in each room and things like that, you would imagine. But I would guess that if they make them available to the public, that would be really useful for people who are not necessarily at home all the time and have to take care of a senior citizen in their family as well.
Okie dokie. Good stories though for today. Right, before we go though, we've had a couple of messages from people at home when we asked you about whether or not you would take part in the great Facebook dating service. What do we have, Chris?
Well, most people who have messaged in aren't very cynical about all of this. This is from Raz, who just says, most young couples already use Facebook to develop their social relationships, some posting cryptic love messages on their walls. This experiment by Facebook is just an extension of that. Personally, I don't believe in online relationships. It's fake.
Okay.
Oh, cool.
Interesting stuff.
This is a really lovely, cynical way to end the show.
Absolutely. Right. It is time for us to wrap up, though. It's all the time that we have for today. If you did miss any part of this show, remember you can listen back on the podcast, which will be available in just a few minutes, via the BFM app, which is available from the Apple App Store or, of course, from Google Play. Now, let's quickly run through the stories that we covered today. Of course, we did start off with that Facebook story.
Yes, which is all about how Facebook is making a Tinder killer to help people find dates, not just hookups.
Then, of course, that story about Instagram launching a new technology, rolling out a new technology today that will use AI and machine learning to help filter out bullying comments.
We then moved on to a story about a report from CB Insights that analyzed 101 startup postmortems, and they found out that the main reason that most startups fail is really simple. The startup didn't solve a big enough problem.
Yeah, then that story about Singapore's Changi Airport may use facial recognition systems to find late passengers, and this as early as next year.
Yeah, and then we talked about a smart dresser that might help dementia sufferers put their clothes on right.
There you go then, folks. Do not go anywhere, though, because coming up after the 1 o'clock news, of course, is the Breakfast Grill replay. The Malaysian Trade Unions Congress, the MTUC, is the oldest national organisation representing over 500,000 workers across all industries in the country. In conjunction with Labour Day, the Breakfast Grill spoke to the past and present leadership of the MTUC on issues affecting Malaysian workers. That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. Now, on behalf of Facebook, then, I'll play as a song to take us out of the show. It is Duffy with Tainted Love here on BFM 89.9, the business station. We'll speak to you tomorrow, folks.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.